Welcome to the Experience Points podcast show. It's episode 69 for the week of March 17, 2010.
Experience Points podcast. I'm Scott Jester.
I'm George Albor.
And I'm Chris Amayevsky.
All right. And as you might have heard, we have a special guest here at the Experience Points Studios, Berkeley. It is Christian. He's a longtime writer, game designer, frequent commenter, quasi-internet stalker.
and to boost your creds, you were recently nominated for the Indie Games Festival Awards for your game Trauma.
I was, yes.
And that was awarded for, again, your audio and your...
It was audio, video, and it was a grand prize.
Ooh.
I guess first, should we talk about how you first started getting into game design?
Sure.
Okay, when did you realize that this was what you wanted to do?
I never realized that at any point. Mm. But when I was like a small kid, you know... I was 10 or something. I got like an Atari PC. Mm. No, in Europe, I think the Ataris were less consoles, but real computers.
Yeah.
And you could program them and everything. And, you know, by and by, I learned how to program it and how to make games with it. So I started making really stupid games.
What was the first game you ever made?
I think it was a submarine simulator, but it was like with a text-based interface. And you could just go down and up and that's it.
Nice. Your parents must have been very proud of you.
They were totally proud of me.
They weren't yelling at you to like go play outside. They were,
well, of course they did.
Okay,
every parent does that. They have to. I think I will have to do it as well with my kids. And then, you know, I started. You know, I got sometime at some point. I got a PC and I started programming this. And after high school, I was, you know, looking for, you know, what I'm going to do with my life and stuff like that.
Mm.
And I actually went to a game development company called Neon Studios.
Mm-hmm.
Now today they called Keen. They kind of went bankrupt and re-emerged and stuff like that.
No, of no fault of your own, of course.
No. Well, I left at some point and they were so desolate.
I'm sure that was the case. Are there any games that you can think of that inspired you in your early days of programming that maybe even still inspire you now?
I remember one game that totally blew me away when I was a young kid. It was called Bruce Lee, and it was like a jump and run, but you were fighting against two guys, and one of them was a ninja, and the other one was a green guy, green fat guy, and you could and you could do a jump kick, and when you do that, and, you know, your character would move very slowly through the air, like in Matrix. But I don't think it was intentional. I thought this was kind of like a, you know, technical problem.
Was this an Atari thing or was this NES?
It was an Atari, and I don't think it was on the NES, but I saw it on Commodore 64 as well.
So Bruce Lee continues to inspire your games today.
Now, I guess nowadays not so much, but back then it was really cool. It was also one of the first games I actually finished.
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting thing to remember. I don't really remember the first game that I ever finished.
Oh, really? I remember mine.
What was it?
A Jackal. We talked about the Jackal a lot. The Jeep Combat.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just remember being really frustrated as a kid. I don't know. I've never finished a game. No. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the current game that you're working on? Because people might have seen it on the blogs recently.
Yeah, it's called Trauma, and it's I guess you can compare it. The most, you know, straightforward thing you can compare it to is a point and click adventure, which means, you know, you have different screens and you click through the screens, and it's very much about the story, very much about the mood and the setting. And also there is a little bit of puzzle solving involved.
Mm-hmm.
The things that make it different from other point-click adventures is that, the puzzle solving is very basic. There is no, for example, if you know games like Myst.
Yeah.
In those games, you have like lots of mechanical stuff, and you have to figure out some codes and find some hidden messages and stuff like that. None of that is actually in Trauma.
Mm-hmm.
In Trauma, it's just about, you know, more exploring the environment, you know, just enjoying the general atmosphere. And, you know, also listening to the story, there's like constant voiceovers going on in the background. And also the game is very, very short. It's like made up of four different levels. Each level is like 5 minutes long.
Were you inspired by games like Myst and Monkey Island and all those things and try to do something different consciously.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Like when I did it as a part of my final thesis as a game designer, not game designer, but as a designer in general.
Mm.
And I would totally, you know, I look at all the adventure games, what how they emerge from, you know, from text adventures, and even back then, even further, you know, from choose your own adventure books.
Yeah.
And then I looked, you know, in the 90s, they kind of, you know, suddenly, you know, went away.
Mm-hmm.
And so I look at, you know, what made them great and what made them not so popular at some point anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, try to eliminate the things that maybe put off so many people.
What do you think those things were?
So it's a little different, difficult, but I think it was things like, you know, the things I mentioned, like, they're very complicated and very long as well.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I remember, like, the random natures of the puzzle. Like, you wouldn't think that these two, like, the cheese and the string go together. Like, there's a logical reason
cheese why you might think that. Cheese and string always go together.
Yeah.
Remember in a recent game, you have to kind of combine a cat with duct tape and iPhone, and it was like, oh. Yeah. But also, you know, in these games, if you got stuck, they suddenly got very, very boring and very annoying.
Yeah.
And then you would look up, you know, their solution on the internet or something, but that would kind of spoil the entire fun for you as well.
Yeah.
So I try to eliminate like these aspects and you know, make it very compact experiences.
And you're doing all the art for it as well, right? Like, you're doing the picture taking and stuff that you're...
Yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah. Actually, all the art is made as photos.
Uh-huh.
So I went out of photo camera and shot all the photos by myself.
Mm.
Basically, almost the entire game is made by myself. Only the music and the sound effects.
Mm-hmm.
I work with another guy called Martin Straka,
mm-hmm.
who is kind of like a pretty experienced musician as far as Flash games go in Germany. He worked on different projects, mostly Flash games, and he's a pretty talented guy, I must say.
Are you like dragging your friends in to do voiceover and script reading and stuff?
Yeah, I dragged my girlfriend to do the voiceovers at first, and actually she did a pretty good job, because later on I hired a real actress to do the voice acting. And while I don't know, we kind of struggle with which one's better. The actress certainly has a better pronunciation, more clearer pronunciation. But my girlfriend was able to kind of to nail some kind of weird natural feel to the whole thing.
Maybe you should go into voice acting.
Maybe I should.
She'll be very happy you said that.
No, but in the end, I went with the actress because I thought it was, you know, for communicating this to a wider audience, I think it was certainly the better choice.
Mm. Well, it's cool that we have you on this episode, and of course, it coincides with GDC, which is why you're in town. Let's not lie. I mean, you didn't just jump over the pond to come visit us. but so, you know, everyone's here at GDC, and as you folks have probably already seen, dozens and dozens, probably hundreds of talks that happened during the entire week. So we decided to pick one that caught our eye and related to what you've been doing, Christian. This was a talk given by Chris Hecker, and he has worked on Spore, but this talk itself was not just about big budget games, not just about indie games specifically, but it was about games in general, whoever's making them. And his rant, he exhorted people to finish your game. Please finish your game, which sounds kind of weird when you're first thinking about it. Like, okay, why would you ever put out a game that's not finished? But he even admitted himself, of course, he'd be loath to hear that we're repeating this, but he admitted himself that in many ways Spore wasn't finished in the way that he defined, which was...
exploring a lot of the depth.
Yeah.
Right. And he actually suggested that instead of exploring a lot of wacky ideas in game design, that we just explore the depth that we already have in the games and see them through to the very end.
Mm-hmm.
And he mentioned Cactus as an interesting developer, someone who is just amazingly prolific gentleman. I believe he's Swedish.
From Europe at least.
Which, I mean, isn't to explain why he's able to do this. I'm not saying Swedes are amazing at quick game design. But all of his games are very bizarre, very out there. They tend to be really extreme design decisions. Mm. And he pumps them out usually within a day.
Yeah.
Almost less than a day. Some are 4 hours long.
Mm.
Actually, he won one of the IGF awards
this year. He did, yes. He won, was it Best Innovation?
I think it might have been Innovation. And he actually made a pretty funny speech as well.
Yeah, his speech was about 6 minutes long, and the only word he said was "thank you." So
he also said, "I would like to thank Jesus."
Oh, that's correct. So very, very eccentric designer, absolutely.
Yeah.
But again, that he has a design approach where, you know, it's scattershot. He decides to just put out everything that, as soon as it comes off of his mind.
Mm.
And it's something that Chris Hecker thinks is a bad idea to some extent.
Yeah, and we'll embed the video of this talk on the website as well. It's only about 10 minutes long, pretty worth a watch. But it brings up an interesting point, which is a game isn't just done magically, right? Like, there's a lot of things that go into it. I mean, this could be money, this could be accomplishments, this could be just straight-out boredom, I'm assuming, right? So, Christian, as someone who's made games in the past and is currently making a game, how do you decide when your games are done?
Oh, that's a pretty pretty awesome question.
Yeah, yeah.
I have no idea. And also, you know, especially if you look at games like by Cactus.
Yeah.
Because these games look so crazy, and it's sometimes very difficult to, you know, I don't know. I guess he doesn't have a clear idea of what he's going after either, right? So I have no idea how he's doing it.
Mm.
Like, for example, with Trauma, it was pretty clear that, you know, I had a certain vision in my mind and was like working constantly towards it, and every time, you know, there was something not right with it, I would like see it immediately and try to, you know, change it.
Mm.
But now when the game is coming, you know, coming to an end and most of the important stuff is in, I also have to, you know, struggle with, you know, okay, there's this one video here, do I make, you know, some visuals to this video or just leave it like it is in order to make it more artistic statement, but, you know, less pronounced and stuff like that.
Mm.
So yeah, that's a very difficult topic. But one of the things I notice on this thing is that it's actually very difficult to finish a game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a lot of work involved, and especially if you're working for, you know, I don't know, 6 years. Chris has worked on six
years. Spore was like a 6 year thing for him or something.
So I wonder, you know, it's when you work on one project for that long time, it's very difficult, you know, to motivate yourself.
Mm.
Do you feel like there's a lot of pressure on you to put out the product before it's finished? I mean, I know certainly upcoming to the GDC and your nomination, you must have felt a lot of pressure to give someone a finished product. I mean, the game is not, Trauma is not yet out.
Yeah, totally. Like, I get receive requests from press or something to give them a preview version or something like that. And I already, you know, had to, you know, send them away and said, okay, the game is not yet that finished that I would, you know, feel comfortable with giving it away.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, also with IGF, I had to send in a version which wasn't complete yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then, you know, fans come along and say, oh, I'm so interested in the game and I would like to play it right away.
Even in its unfinished state.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I send out videos and people watch the videos and are just, you know, very interested in the game, want to try it. And, you know, I kind of always feel bad when I see people coming, you know, to the websites and being so, you know, enthusiastic about the stuff I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to, you know, give them a game, but I can't. And I just, you know, it's just an emotional thing.
I feel like one of the reasons why people like Cactus would argue that it's a good thing to just kind of crank out these games is because you could work on it forever.
Yeah.
Right? Like, couldn't you work on Trauma forever?
I guess,
like,
so, yeah. I would kind of keep adding levels, maybe polishing stuff. Even now, when I see people play it and they find it awesome and stuff like that, even I look at things that could be a little bit better, where I could, you know, tweak some stuff a little better. I see people get stuck a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think, oh, this should be more clear. I should go back to recording and stuff like that. And it's never really finished.
Mm-hmm.
It's you just, you know, have to like close your eyes and just release it.
Yeah.
Which has been a dilemma for artists in any medium for you know, ages.
Yeah,
right?
Ever. I mean, it's even something as crude as like what we do. Sometimes I'll sit there looking at the post button for one of my writings, and it's like, should that be a comma or a semicolon? Comma or semicolon? You know, like, and it's just, you could go on forever like that if you wanted to. But I mean, I guess the balance is trying to figure out if you can explore it fully, right? And so, I don't know. I haven't really played too many of Cactus's games because I'm not sure. You know, you play it for a minute or whatever and you automatically know what it is. There's not much iteration on it. So, I don't want to sound like I'm coming down hard on him. Like, oh, you put out all these games where they're like kind of like one-trick things. But isn't that a danger? Like, if you put out too much stuff, you're just kind of shotgun blasting people, you know? You're not really giving them anything to think about.
Yeah, I think one of the problems with Chris Hecker's talk is that it's really hard to measure how healthy our ratio is between finished games and what he considers to be unfinished games.
Mm-hmm.
And he puts a lot of indie titles up against Braid as an example.
Yeah.
Where I think that there's, you know, I don't think Braid is a perfect game. I think there's a lot of ways in which it's not finished. And
we'll have to link to Christian's voluminous blog posts on Grid. Yeah.
Please don't.
Yeah. I think it's easy to make it sound like a good idea when he says something like, please finish your game.
Mm.
But finishing your game isn't really... He doesn't mean finishing. He means exploring all of the depth that he sees. And how we categorize what that depth exploration looks like is really hard.
Did you think it was an unfair comparison? Like, do you think comparing any indie game to Braid is a fair comparison?
Yeah, I guess, again, you know, we're comparing lots of games with each other, like Braid and Cactus games, and also Spore is even, you know, totally different breeds altogether.
Mm.
So, I guess we have to take in consideration what the goals of the game were. And especially with Braid, I think, you know, this is one game that I guess might, I'm afraid to say it, but...
Say it anyway.
But I think it might have been a little bit more healthier to spend, like, a little bit less time on it, to release it earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think, you know, from what I heard is that, you know, the game was finished a couple of years before they actually released it, and they spent so much time to, you know, refining the graphics and stuff like that.
The art came in pretty late, I think, right?
And I don't think the game is so much better with the art. Mm-hmm. The art doesn't seem to make such a big statement in this game.
Well, I mean, the thing that I found kind of problematic comparing, you know, he has this really good slide where he stacks up 100 indie titles versus Braid and then asks which one had a bigger effect on the medium. And, you know, I agree with him. Braid definitely caused a lot more conversation and everything. But do you think that's because Jonathan Blow is, like, a good promoter?
Yeah, it certainly plays a very important role, and I love his talks. I mean, I heard most of them, and they always inspire me a lot. I mean, he's done great some great work.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. There could be in that mountain of non-Braid games, there could be games that are just as polished and reflective as Braid, but they don't have as good of a showman as Jonathan Blow. You know, they don't have a Jonathan Blow behind them promoting them, and so it's hard to. It's hard to lump those games into unfinished games, even if they are created in a day. It still could be really deep. It's just that they don't have the promotion behind them that Braid has.
Right. In which case, Chris is underestimating the power of just marketing.
Well, yeah, like
and changing how we talk about
sure,
games,
like Barnum and Bailey, right? Like it's about advertising. Like it's
that's
half of what selling something is. I mean,
but those are exactly the cycles that make us pump out unfinished games, right? These marketing cycles where people have to hit release dates so that we can start advertising for the next Uncharted.
Because like Christmas is coming up, so you better release your next Tony Hawk game because it's about advertising. You know, it's not so much as finishing the game.
But for an indie environment, I think it's the other way around. If you release too many games, then you can't really focus on one of them.
Mm.
So, for example, if Jonathan Blow releases one game in 4 years, he can put all his effort and all his money and everything in this one game. And if Cactus is releasing like 4 games a week or something, I mean, something has got to give right at this point. You know, he has to maybe focus on one.
His attention will be split.
Yeah.
But surely that's his goal, right? I mean, his goal is to grab your attention with just a bunch of random little pieces of experimental art, right? So to that extent, he's achieving his goals. Those games are finished in the sense that he never planned to have them finished.
I guess it's if the people are... It's if the people who are making the games are thinking of the games as trying to contribute to what people consider games. I mean, you know, if they're just trying to like prove a point about a certain mechanic or something, they don't really care if they like light the world on fire or something.
Right. Well, you think of it this way, right? Uncharted 2, which won the award for best game of the year at GDC, you're not the biggest fan of. That's very obvious. I think a lot of people would argue that Uncharted 2 was not the most innovative piece of work out of the industry this year.
Yeah.
That being said, it's lauded for being polished to just a spit shine, amazingly well-produced game.
Yeah.
Something where I don't think even you would argue that the game is unfinished, at least in terms of Chris Hecker's definition of unfinished. So to that extent, maybe we have enough of the finished games, right? I think it would have less of a problem with Chris Hecker's talk if he didn't have the slide that mentioned we should have less wacky ideas.
Because
I think those wacky ideas are what breed the good, polished, really nice titles.
Mm-hmm. You know? Oh, okay. Yeah, so instead of like a dichotomy, like, you know, traditional, fully fleshed out games and then wacky stuff, you're looking at it as like an evolutionary thing.
Right.
Like,
I mean, we essentially, there's it's almost like a cultural prototyping, right? All of the games industry, in terms of their communal production of games, is constantly producing weird, wacky, crazy indie titles that experiment with game design.
Mm.
And every now and then, one of these games get finished, in Chris Hecker's definition, and you get a really nicely polished Braid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but even before Braid, people were messing with time.
Yeah, yeah. But he was the one that, you know...
He was the one who finished it out. Yeah, so yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Your game had a great effect, but what games had a great effect on Jonathan Blow and his ideas? Mm. And I don't think that Jonathan Blow would come to you and say, the only games that inspired me were games that were completely finished.
Mm.
Here's a cool analogy. There is an experimental gameplay project you heard about.
Yeah.
Yes.
Where they did like a lot of prototypes in a very small amount of time. Like I think they have 1 week for one game. And by the end of, there were a couple of guys, and by the end of the semester, they would have like, you know, I don't know, a certain amount of games. And during this project, they created a game called Tower of Goo.
Yes.
Yep.
And then two guys from the project actually said, okay, this is a pretty cool game, and we're going to actually make an entire, you know, big game about this game mechanic. So out of these lots of unfinished, wacky ideas, they were able to pick one of the ideas that basically was a good idea and was kind of worth, you know, diving into, and developed World of Goo, which is now, you know, one of the big indie titles.
And certainly one of our favorites here.
Game of the Year 2008, baby.
Oh, yeah.
That was something where... they had the discipline to pick up something that they had created. Like, there's something I think, and you know, I guess it's reflected in our website. It's like we're always regular. Like, we always put out something every week because you know
whether or not it's good, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, true. Like, there have been some times where I press the post button and I'm like, eh, like,
yeah, sure.
Well, that was a week. Like, but you know, you can take something, you know, like a kernel of whatever you had that was going, and then turn it into something like World of Goo.
Absolutely.
And I, you know, I do worry that if you have all these things like game jams and like one day a game type things, that it is pretty easy to just forget them when you're done with it. It makes sense to just kind of get your creative juices flowing and make a game, or like write a song in one day, or write an essay in one day, or something like that. But I don't know. I'm personally a little bit worried about if people do that all the time, they're not looking at a long-term project.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's always important to multitask, right? Like, have one game you're planning on finishing, and then just experiment over here on the side.
Well, you never know what it'll lead to, but I don't know. I feel like I'm maybe a little bit more sympathetic to what he was talking about. I don't know what that says about me, but... yeah.
No, but I really find it... for me, I think it's a very important thing to be able to, you know, release something in a regular schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the things I realized, often notice when I'm, you know, discussing with other game developers, stuff like that, is that actually, you know, he says, finish your games. And I thought he meant something totally different by it. Mm-hmm. Like, he means... explore this idea more carefully and take invest actually more time in your game.
Yeah.
But, you know, the game gets finished either way. It's maybe not so much explored or thoroughly explored, but in both cases, we're talking about games that are actually out there.
Yeah.
And for me as a game developer, the difficult thing is to actually finish the game. To actually, you know, bring something out that people can play, that is not buggy, that you know works on a basic, where the general gameplay is there, because I think a vast majority of especially independent games are never released because, you know, people just give up midway development.
Mm-hmm.
And if he says, you know, you need to invest more time in a game and make it really polished, then that will increase the amount of people who give up because they set their expectations so much higher.
That's a very good point. And to some extent, it's better to have at least the venue for players to explore those game mechanics, even if they're unfinished, than to not have them on the market at all.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So do you give yourself, you know, deadlines? Like, by this time next month, I will have X done.
Yeah, totally. I create schedules and everything, and I blow them every time.
do your peers do that? Do you find that you're kind of an outlier of scheduling, or do you think that it's more common than we think?
I don't know. There are different developers. I heard, for example, about this guy who made... gratuitous space battles.
Gratuitous space battles, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And Hurt, he's like a machine. He's like, you know, going in and 8 hours a day, and you know, has his work hours and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And other guys are, you know, just, you know, more creative.
The artists.
Artists.
Yeah.
And like you know, drinking and getting up at 3 o'clock and then.
Yeah.
Maybe do some coding and it's all buggy and stuff like that. I don't know. I often realize that, you know, I plan ahead and I make plans everything, and then stuff usually takes more time and more effort than I expected.
Yeah.
Like, there are lots of unexpected things, especially if you experiment new gameplay mechanics or stuff like that. And suddenly, you know, this little idea, this little feature you thought would be very easy, suddenly, you know, it turns out to be like a months long project.
What has happened like that? And you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but what has happened like that on your project?
I certainly had, like, this was maybe not so much game development as in programming, but I was working on an animation, which I thought would be, I knew it was challenging, but I had no idea how challenging it
was. I think I was following this saga on Twitter.
It was horrible.
There was like a week or a month where you were talking about a certain animation or something. I was like, oh man.
That was this saga. It took me like at least a month, and it's like an animation of maybe 20 seconds or something.
And so we better notice that, like, when we play this game.
You totally won't notice it, but it's okay.
Do you think that it was worth it to delve into that, regardless?
I don't know. I think it's a good idea. I think it's kind of luxurious that I'm able to spend so much time on one certain feature. It's like, I think most game developers are kind of perfectionists. And, you know, they kind of enjoy it very much if they are able to put something in. That's why I guess, you know, this guy also said, you know, make a game finish. No, follow up on this perfectionism and actually, you know, go all the way through instead of, you know, giving up at some point and bring out some unfinished products.
My fear is that people will still give up certain aspects of their game.
Yeah.
So like you mentioned that one animation was really time consuming. If you were super paranoid about reaching a certain deadline, don't you think that it would be more likely for developers to just stop exploring little things that they don't know how long they can take? You know, some of the weirder experimental mechanics, people don't know how much trouble they're going to cause until they're already way into the process.
Mm.
So they might not have all of the time to explore that mechanic, but at least it's in there. I mean, at least they tried, right?
Mm.
I'm pretty sure that, like, in a commercial environment, the people, I'm pretty sure that the people, especially, for example, in these animations, they would, at some point, somebody would come in and say, okay, this takes way too long time, you have to kind of simplify it.
Yeah, or scrap the idea completely.
Yeah, yeah. Totally. Yeah.
Well, if you're working in some huge cubicle farm in Activision, and you tell your, you know, project lead that, hey, this animation's going to take a month, he'd laugh in your face. He'd be like, you know, keep going.
But and that's kind of why I think it's so important to temper our trust in Chris Hecker's talk when he targeted it so much towards the indie crowd.
Yeah.
You know, because that's the venue for people to do that experimentation. Because we're not exactly getting it a lot from the major studios.
Mm-hmm. So it's like you're my dad when he said, you better have fun in college because after you're out of college, it won't be any fun.
I mean, if we're going to ask anyone to come up with wacky ideas, it's the indie crowd.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, and even at GDC during some of the acceptance speeches for the major awards, some of the developers said, you know, what we do is essentially take your ideas and put them into the big games.
Yeah.
So all of the good stuff that's coming out of the indie side right now is going to be something we'll be incorporating in the future.
Mm.
You know, something that is going to be bringing the medium itself to, you know, brighter and more weird grounds. Even if Cactus is doing his part.
Yeah.
You know,
totally.
It's a very weird, eccentric part.
Yeah.
And it's not the best games in the world, but, you know, there's a place for that.
Yeah. I'll buy that. You probably won me over by that. Especially, like, yeah, definitely, because there's only so many places where you can experiment with completing a game or not completing a game, and also there's only so many places where you can actually throw out a game. Like, if you're making the next terrible Tony Hawk game and you're like, oh, this is terrible, I'm just gonna throw this out, they'd be like, nope, no you're not, like, you're gonna release this,
you always outsource it.
Good point.
There's one point where I totally agree with him. Like, finishing game in releasing a game and actually, you know, bringing a game to your audience. And this is like the most important thing about game development, because if you, you know, cancel it and, you know, give up in midway, mm-hmm. that's the worst possible thing you can do.
Totally agree. Ever. Yeah, because mm-hmm. I mean, you're not putting anything out there for us to chew on,
and all the work invested in it is probably lost and pretty much lost. I mean, people always say maybe then, oh, maybe I just learned something and I can invest in a future project. That's bullshit. You forgot everything.
You fucked it up. It's too late now.
And even if the game is like not perfect and stuff like that, it's still better, you know, to see it through to the end and have that feedback from other people instead of, you know, from yourself, because maybe some there are some aspects of it, like in Cactus Games, like maybe there are some aspects of it that actually are pretty cool, and maybe there will be follow-ups which work better.
It also seems like there might be a distribution issue here, because if you're an indie person, you're also your own marketer and publisher and everything, so making the game is one thing, but if you really care about people playing the game, like, the experience doesn't end once you're finished with the game. Mm. Like, you have to, you know, maybe it's worth it to learn some things from, like, Jonathan Blow and promote yourself, get it into players' hands, you know?
And not only learn it yourself, maybe you also want to kind of establish yourself as somebody who publishes games.
Yeah.
And if you hold off for too long for that, you know, you will be some kind of outsider coming from nowhere. Nobody will be, you know, even if your games are awesome, people will be like, who are you? I don't know. And, you know.
Yeah.
It would be so much harder to sell your products when they are ready for it.
Well, that's I think that was a pretty good discussion on Hecker's thing. I mean, it's so strange having a third chair in the studio, so we should, like, make use of it.
It's a pretty comfortable chair.
All right. You heard it here, folks. Spare no expense. What games are you playing right now? What are you enjoying? I know you're probably toiling away on your own game, but you got to squeeze in a minute here or there.
I think I'm going to move a few centimeters away from you, because I'm going to tell you that I played Scribblenauts today.
And you've been enjoying it?
Yes, actually.
How many hours have you put into Scribblenauts?
I don't know. I think I'm in world 6 or 7 right now.
Each world has, like, sub-worlds, right?
No, but each world has, like, action and puzzles, and I only did the puzzle stuff. But then again, I made each puzzle like with a star, with a gold star. We have to solve it 3 times.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, How are you liking Scribblenauts?
I like it very much. I know the critique of it. Like, you know, the controls are very, very broken. Yeah. but I enjoy it very much nonetheless.
I don't know. I don't know. Well, I guess I exactly know why I didn't like the game. It's because the controls were killing me. Like,
same here.
Literally killing me. Like. The guy would jump off a cliff every time I tried to do something.
Yeah, it's totally annoying, yeah.
It's totally annoying. God, yeah.
It's like, funny to think of, like, how much you're willing to go through, which is actually, like, somewhat representative of Hacker's Talk, right?
Yeah.
Like, Scribblenauts won the Best Innovation Award, as well as the Best Handheld Game Award.
Yeah.
And I thought that was ludicrous.
Yeah.
But I guess part of it is that there's quite a bit of people who will suffer through a game despite its flaws, you being one of them.
I guess.
Anything besides Scribblenauts that you've been doing recently?
Recently I played Resident Evil 5.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
And I played actually with a colleague of mine, Yu Chong Chen, who's actually also the game developer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we were playing cooperatively, then I played alone and stuff like that. I wanted to explore all the critique around it. And, I was reminded of your podcast about it, because I thought it was really, really thorough and really great. Yeah.
Were you in the same room when you were playing together, or were you doing it over Xbox Live?
We did it over Xbox Live.
We were in the same room, and I don't know, that might have... That probably helped us.
Absolutely. I think it was a much more fun experience because we were there.
Yeah.
But the screen...
That last level almost made us quit.
But aren't the screens smaller then?
Yeah, and they do this weird thing where it's not like Halo, where they just cut the entire screen in
half. Yeah, it's like
bizarre squares.
Yeah, they preserve the ratio that you would have... It, with the single player thing, so you have dead space on either side.
I think for us it was a little bit easier because he already finished the game before we played cooperatively.
So does that mean you were playing on his, like, New Game Plus thing? Like, you had cool guns and stuff?
He had Chivas outfit.
Oh god.
It made it so much easier on the eyes.
We couldn't bring ourselves to play it through again. We barely finished that last volcano level.
Which Shiva outfit do you mean? The clubbing outfit or the bikini outfit?
I meant the tribal one.
Oh, he had this one. It's horrible and attractive at the same time.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Had you played Resident Evil 4?
Yes, I did.
Did you love it as much as I loved it?
I think it's one of the best games out there.
Good man. Oh. Good man.
But I played it on a Wii version. Is that a bad thing?
I play it on the GameCube. I've never actually played the Wii version. I mean, I'm assuming it's neat with the... pointing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
The aiming is really precise in that game.
Yeah, I had a lot of people kind of complain about it. I know one guy who actually complained about it because the Wiimote controls kind of have a lot of auto-aiming going on. Like the dot, you know, where you aim is huge, mm-hmm. and you don't really have to precisely hit the head. You just can aim in a general direction. But I didn't notice it so much.
Mm.
And for me, it was just a very enjoyable experience overall.
How many times did you guys fail? Oh, no, he had already played it, so you guys probably didn't mess up the Jill battle.
We totally mess it up all the time.
Oh, okay.
Every time there was how do you call it?
The quick time
event.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We messed every opportunity to mess up.
You just have to do it all over again.
Yeah. Really funny was the last one when, by the end, you're kind of...
Where you're punching a rock.
Well, that was really funny. No, at some point Shiba's like falling down, and uh-huh. and he kind of the main guy has to grab her, from falling down.
Yeah.
And I missed that one. It was like, and it made like such a great tragic ending, right? It makes sense from all the story arcs and everything, but they didn't allow us.
David Cage would have loved that.
Yeah, you're
yeah,
doing
totally.
Like the Heavy Rain permadeath version of RE5.
Yeah, that would be awesome. But unluckily, you know, we had to kind of continue to do it again, and then there was another boss fight coming after that. And then I made a playthrough on like very, very hard.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that like the last thing you do in the game is the quick time event where mm-hmm. you kind of shoot your rocket launcher into the...
As he's like chasing you or whatever.
Yeah, and then I realized you can mess up as well.
Yeah.
And then he will like chain you down and bring you down.
Oh, we know.
Yeah.
okay, that's good.
We suffered through it as well. That's cool. It's interesting to hear. Is there anything forthcoming that you're looking forward to playing?
Actually, I thought since I'm in America and violent video games are okay here.
Oh yeah.
I just bought lots of stuff. I bought God of War collection.
Yes.
Oh nice.
I just played through that. Excellent.
Oh awesome. Yeah. And then I'm probably gonna grab God of War 3 as well.
Cool. Is there anything else that we need to cover before we wrap it? Oh, you know, what we should do is let Christian get his plugs in. Where can we go see Trauma? What's the website?
Yeah, where
should
we
look for it?
Yeah. Okay. My blog is called Game Design Reviews. It's mm-hmm. that's gamedesignreviews.com in one word. And I guess you will find information about Trauma there. It's not out yet, but I think it will be out in, I don't know, 1 month or 2 months or something. It's already pretty far ahead.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And you're on Twitter too, right? What's your...
Yes, my Twitter account is at Christman, KrystMan.
Cool. Well, excellent. Thanks for coming by.
Absolutely.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
It's always nice to see. It's always nice to put a face
totally.
Behind the comments that are... explaining to me my mistakes about what technical limitations are.
Well, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Not a problem. All right, everyone. And, you know, if you folks listening out there have any ideas about Chris Hecker's talk or want to ask Christian any questions, you know, travel over to his blog, send him something on Twitter, talk smack about him in the comments section at our podcast. He'll be lurking there waiting to pounce all over you, too. So yeah, feel free. experiencepoints.blogspot.com is the site. Thanks for being on, Christian.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And until next time, take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Sweet.